Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Okay, the truth is, I absolutely forgot who that was.
Well, we both like it a whole lot.
Well, I figured when I first heard it, I thought, "Wow, that'll really fit in with Gail's shtick or Gloria's shtick." But can't remember who it was, so I guess it doesn't matter at this point. But I'm going to see if I can find it while we're talking. Hey, thanks for catching with us. This is LA Talk Radio, and I am your host in the Writer's Block, Jim Christina, in my little hobble studio here in downtown 7,000-person Star, Idaho. And, of course, meeting me on the radio tonight on her phone as well from her little hobble in Albuquerque, New Mexico, is Bobby Jean Bell.
Hi.
Hi.
And happy Halloween evening to you. Have you had a lot of trick-or-treaters at your door?
Well, you know, we did earlier, and I got up and I ran to the office.
Yeah. But you did have some, because this is your first year there, so.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's like, it was called Outbreak. It's from the movie.
Oh, Outbreak. Oh, that's a good number to use tonight.
Well, I thought so.
That's right.
If you could say it, we could do it. So there you go. At Outbreak. You know, I was thinking earlier, Bobby Jean, before we really get into this guest, whom I really want to speak to tonight, for almost 5 years, we have had the most interesting and wonderful writers on this program. And to date, I will say to date, we have not had a bad one.
I'm with you. In fact, Gloria and I were talking about that just earlier. It's phenomenal. The numbers of books that we've read and how each one has spoken to us on some level and also had a delightful writer behind
it. Yeah. And it's like, actually the show keeps going because of the listenership that we have and the new writers that come on board and they listen to the advice and the stories that the writers that we have in the air tell, which as we tell them all is that this is show is of course geared towards new writers and it's a how-to show. And hopefully that gets across. But it's also a storytelling show, which is usually the first part of the program. So I'm just going to let that go by. And I'm going to say for right now, our guest tonight is she grew up in Garwood, New Jersey. She earned her medical degree at the University of Kentucky and received special Kentucky. That seemed to be a common thread the last couple of weeks. Received specialized training in bioterrorism and bioterrorism response at the United States Army Medical Research Institute of Infectious Diseases, hence the knowledge for this novel. She is a recognized expert in the international transport of disease. Dr. Casal, or as she is known, Gloria Casal, was a consultant to the Division of Transnational Threats at Sandia Laboratory. Please welcome to the Writer's Block, Ms. Gloria Casal.
I'm getting some applause.
So, do you prefer Gloria or do you prefer Doc?
I prefer Gloria.
Oh, perfect, because I do not like Doc.
And just because we don't ever know how to pronounce things, it is Casali, which I just learned tonight as well.
Okay, Casali.
I've known Gloria for a couple of years, and to me it was always Casal, but it's Casali.
Yeah, most Americans say Casal because the E is silent in most American words. But right. In Italy, you pronounce every syllable that you say.
Well, well, that's true, because I am one. I'm one of them.
I knew, Jim, you would understand that.
I do, actually. But I'm thinking of Victor Casale, who was in the Godfather movies, played Freddy. So, and, you know, a lot of Italians come to the United States and they bastardize their names. And so you never know what's correct.
Yeah, my brother uses the Casale form.
Oh, does he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think he just got tired of telling people it's Casale. So he just call him whatever they want.
Whatever.
Yeah, and then there are some people call him names that we can't say on the radio.
Late for dinner. Well, go ahead. I mean, both Bobby Jean and I have read this just phenomenal book that you put out. And although it is your first novel, I will say it's one of the most enjoyable first novels I have ever read.
Well, thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. Well, you know, on this show, we give credit where credit is due.
Well, then I have to give credit to all the wonderful people that helped me learn how to write.
Well,
because it is a learning process. And as I was telling
Bobby, that's okay.
I keep on wanting to say Billy, and I know it's not Billy.
Well, it could be.
I was telling Bobby that writers don't write, they rewrite.
Exactly.
And rewrite until you're so sick of the book that you don't ever want to look at it again. And then you know that it's ready for publication. Right.
Well, you know, I'm on my 15th book, and I still am learning little nuances and or picking up stuff here and there. It's like playing a guitar. You never quit learning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, writing is the same thing. You never quit learning. And you're absolutely right, Gloria. You don't write, you rewrite.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there is a writing community here in Albuquerque, New Mexico, that is just phenomenal.
Is that right?
One of the few pastimes I've ever done that everybody is willing to help everybody else. It is absolutely fascinating.
You know, and I'm glad you brought that up, because this little form that we you know, we ask the authors, you know, Jim, always to fill out. So often when we ask, you know, do you belong to any writing groups? You know, the answer will come back, well, no, at this time, not at this time.
Right.
But Gloria belongs to a bunch of them. And that's what made me realize, like, wow, all of these groups are in Albuquerque.
Right.
My hometown.
Well, you know, it's what's really kind of cool is that between the two of us, Bobby, we know so many wonderful writers. And a lot of them are down by you, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Johnny Boggs is there.
Johnny Boggs.
Mm-hmm. Jim Jones. And
yep.
And a few others that I just can't think of for a moment.
And I'll see Johnny Boggs at the International Western Music Association conference in 2 weeks.
Well, Jim should be there too.
And Jim Jones too, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Tell him hi for me, because and tell
I
him.
I will.
Tell him.
I'll just say hi from Jim and he'll know.
Yeah. Just walk up to him. Hi, Stephen. Jim says hi.
Yeah, exactly. But Gloria belongs, you know, to a wide variety too. Southwest writers and then mystery writers, Croak and Dagger.
Croak and Dagger.
I like it.
That's our local chapter.
And so that's a local chapter of Sisters in Crime.
Yeah.
Yeah. What have you found? I know we're going to want to get into the book in a moment, but since we're on this subject, what have you found to be the most helpful of belonging to a writer's group?
Sharing ideas, putting together conferences, because I'm actually a vice president of Croak and Dagger. So getting more and more talent, bringing talent in, and all the association that we have. Sisters in Crime is really cool because it's for writers and readers.
That was my next question. Would be, okay, because I'm a reader, so I know some groups are really very just writer-based. Nope. So they're also a reader-based group. Oh, sounds like a group I need to belong to, Jim.
Yes, so and we're hosting Left Coast Crime.
Uh-huh. Well, and I saw
in 2 years.
You have some, and you've won some awards that I thought was fun. Did you see that, Jim? She won an award. What was it? First best line.
No. Oh, yeah, I did, actually. But I was wondering what that was. So I guess you got
tell us about that.
Well, it's Thriller Writers of America.
Thriller.
Have a contest every year, and you send in opening line on one of your books. So I'm doing a biography.
Yeah.
An autobiography.
Yeah.
And so I wrote, I can't even remember the first.
Well,
I went to medical school on a dare, and I did.
And that was the line. Is that the line?
That is the line. And so with my autobiography that I'm writing, that's how it starts. I went to medical school on a dare. I had been a nurse for 17 years, and the docs were saying to me, you should have been a doctor. You should go to medical school. You really should go. And finally, the chief of orthopedics looked at me and said, you don't have the courage to go to medical school. And I said something pretty unforgivable to him, actually. And he laughed at me because I went to medical school and I did my residencies and I taught at University of Kentucky. And every time, and he was chief of orthopedics. So every time we crossed paths, he'd look at me and smile and say, guess you showed me. So he knew exactly which buttons to push.
Interesting.
But you made it. And now you're a bioterrorist.
Yeah. No,
I'm still preventing it.
Yeah.
Well, you're retired now, aren't you?
I am retired.
Yeah. Doesn't that feel great?
I don't have any time left in my day. I'm doing more stuff.
I know, she's
now.
So busy.
I'm an artist. I'm a writer.
Yes.
You know.
And you make German sauerkraut.
And I make German sauerkraut.
What was that, 95 pounds for that festival a couple
weeks ago?
I
made 95 pounds. And I was supposed to have all this help, and the help never showed up, so I couldn't tell you how many has.
Okay, first of all, you made 95 pounds of sauerkraut.
Yeah.
For a festival.
Did you put wieners in it?
We had brats, and we had knockwurst.
Oh, my God.
It was fabulous. And it's going to be a yearly event,
so
you'll have to come down next year.
Well, next year, probably.
Yeah.
Let's get into your book because it is such an amazing read, and it's actually at the same time it's kind of fun because it takes you all over the world.
Yes.
And I mean, you're in the yachts in the Mediterranean, and you're in Russia in the snow up to your butt, and you're on the East Coast, and I mean, it just hauls you everywhere, and it's such a delightful read. And why don't you give us the premise of the book? If you wouldn't mind, Gloria.
Well, the premise of the book is that a Russian scientist whose family is starving because the Russians have taken all the money to put it into the various and sundry pockets of where they would rather have their money. And so they're, you know, if you remember, just recently something happened in Novosibirsk with one of the labs, and they had a total disaster and a breakdown on something. But so when I first started writing it, and some of the people that were helping me, they were saying, oh, Gloria, you're thinking about Russia in the 40s, that they're pulling all the money away from the scientists and the people that are working there. And I'm going, no, this is what's going on there now. And they were surprised, and then of course everybody found out. Yes, indeed, that's exactly how the current Russian administration is working.
Yeah.
So we have a main character. We have Anne. And she is really out there exclaiming for years about getting us ready, the United States ready to handle bioterrorism. And lots of people don't really believe her, do they?
Not really. They're starting to come around now as different things have happened in the world. And, of course, this last breakdown with the Russian laboratory in Novosibirsk. So everybody is getting more and more and more aware that it's out there. And a lot of the diseases are not being held so that they're really safe.
Right.
They're getting more and more precarious.
Right. I actually think that Russia is the one country where the phrase good enough for government work was coined. It's like they don't give a crap. If they get it done as haphazard, they say, well, it's close enough for government work. Let's get to work. Mm-hmm. And then it fails. Chernobyl. Mm-hmm. All these laboratories that are failing and leaving and putting out biohazards.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's Russia.
So one of the things, too, about this book, Jim, that I thought was interesting is she starts it with a date. We begin in like November 10th.
Right.
And then the last chapter is like in April. So this is contiguous months. And as Jim was saying, we go all over the world and we have a pretty long cast of characters. Some are in for a longer period of time than others. Tell us a little bit about maybe one that was particularly interesting to write. Was there any one character that you just loved writing those scenes that character was in?
I liked Yuri. I did. I fell in love with Yuri somewhere along the line.
Yuri is our Russian scientist.
Yes. I just fell in love with the character.
Yeah. And Connor is based on a real person.
Right.
Who has been a friend of mine since we were in the sandbox together, basically.
So are you Anne?
Well,
a little bit.
You know, how many Italian heritage kinds of women do you know with dark hair, with gray starting to show through, who have gone to medical school? So, yeah, and I'm a lot of Anne.
Yeah, you're
or
right.
Anne is a lot of me.
Yeah.
Well, then there's also her best friend, who is a junior senator.
Yes.
That's right.
Who is a total piece of work. And you have so many characters in this book that is like, it's really kind of hard to keep up with them all. But
I had to make a list.
Yeah. Oh, you did. Of course you did.
I did because I began to lose. I began to lose track of who's.
I do too. And you know, I have to tell you, Gloria, that your mastery of Russian. I don't know if you used a dictionary, but it seems like it just rolls off your pen. And not me. I if it doesn't say Mike, I can't pronounce it.
Yeah, well, my father was Italian. My mother was from Eastern Europe.
Aha!
So, but she was from Slovakia, and I had to laugh because I think the very first people that bought the book were some cousins in Slovakia, and they read the book, and they wrote back to me, and they said, "We know where you got the names."
Oh, family stuff.
So I took the Slovak names and I changed the endings so that they were Russian endings.
And
I've been over there often enough, so I kind of know the culture and I know how they react, which is not like Americans react at all. So that's why some of the flavor is so authentic when I'm talking about Eastern Europe.
That's important to know. Yeah. Have you traveled a lot where you've been to the places that you write about? Or
I've been to almost all of them.
So you've been there firsthand.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, I mean,
but
that's not all. Plane tickets. Eastern Europe, and you do a lot of train travel, isn't that right?
Yes. And actually, we have driven a lot of, when my husband was alive, we drove a lot of Germany, Austria. Eastern Europe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow. In a car that you guys rented, I assume, because hardly anybody
wants. Yeah.
Very cool. I'm just reading the news here. It says, Indiana woman found dead with 8-foot python coiled around her neck. Duh.
You're reading the news?
It just popped up on
our news. You've got two beautiful women.
I have a news feed on my phone that popped up.
I have a beer.
Well, you know, of course, if you get an 8-foot python wrapped around your neck, you're going to be found dead. So anyway, well,
there would be a good opening first line to a story.
Yeah,
I think so.
Was it a family pet?
Oh my gosh!
I don't know. I haven't read the story. I just gave you the headline. I don't want to go home.
Jim, when you were reading this book, were there any surprises?
No, not real surprises. I would say there are, well, yeah, kind of. The Syrian guy?
Which one?
The guy who, I think it was the guy who owned the yacht.
Okay, so because I, this is where I had to, and I won't get their names right, but that was a surprise to me. We have one wealthy guy, and starts with an I.
Elhalby.
Yeah. Okay, and of course, you know, he seems like a guy really in control, but he's really intimidated by Al Habib.
Yeah.
And he's intimidated by another guy. And so every time I was like,
Shamash.
Yeah, I was like, wait a minute. I thought that was like the main guy. What just happened to him? You know, and then, wait a minute. I thought he was. So those were little surprises for me with those characters.
Yeah.
And I don't, we probably don't want to do spoiler alerts, but
not this book.
One of the things that was interesting was how they were able, our State Department was able to be tracking phone calls. There was a flurry of phone calls, you know, with Yuri and a couple of other, and then people monitoring the lines, like the Moscow desk, the Berlin desk, a Berlin desk and the Moscow desk. And then they got, they were like, hey, have you heard, have you seen? And I thought, wow, that's got to be true. I mean, that kind of stuff. And Gloria's going, yes.
It's true, Bobby. They kind of do that. Hey, take a break, ladies, and let's have ourselves a little word from Out West.
The Writer's Block is sponsored by Out West Shop, your online portal to great Western apparel. Log on to outwestshop.com to see the latest in men's and women's Western and country Western inspired apparel and accessories. Click on Out West Live for on-demand live Western music concerts, Western music and equestrian lifestyle radio show podcasts, as well as this one, The Writer's Block. Why not listen while you shop? Use coupon code RADIO to save on your purchases this month. OutWestShop.com delivers the West to you no matter where you hang your hat, door to door and around the world. Remember, it's always a great day out West.
As it truly is, we were back in the studio with Bobby Jean Bell and, of course, Gloria Casale. And we're speaking about her book about bioterrorism. And wow, you know what really got to me is that all these Syrians and all these bad guys, they think they're carrying around these vials of deadly smallpox, and they're not. You know, they think, hey,
spoiler alert.
I bought this stuff, and hey, you know, we're gonna do this, and no, you're not actually. No. You're going to give a mad cow disease. What the hell?
Well, one of the things that I was going to ask Gloria is, because smallpox is talked about quite a bit in the beginning of the book, why smallpox of all the different things, even though we know later on it's not going to be smallpox, but you start the story off with talking about smallpox. Why smallpox?
Because we no longer immunize against it. I was immunized against it. I couldn't tell you how many times.
Oh, me too. Three or four.
And, yeah. And then I guess when my youngest son was born, they didn't want to give him a smallpox vaccination. And I held my breath and laid down on the floor in the doctor's office until he agreed that he would get the immunization for Brian. But basically it was... So all of my kids have been immunized, and it's just one of those things that's out there. If somebody has the opportunity, it's going to be here again. We don't know where it came from. We don't know why it's gone away, except that it's not being transmitted anymore. Mm-hmm. And so it's gone back down to wherever it came from, I guess, but it's still out there somewhere. And of course, many labs, and we thought for a long time it was just the Russian labs and the United States labs that had any stores. And now we're finding that not everybody turned in all of their vials. They all kept a little bit. Mm-hmm. France has had it. I think some of the Middle Eastern countries absolutely have it. Some of the Orient has it. So it's out there and it's possible.
And we're vulnerable.
And we're vulnerable because nobody is immunized anymore.
Right. And then, I mean, then the Mideasterns, they devise these dirty bombs that they can blow up and all this stuff goes everywhere.
That's right.
And they say, I don't remember what your comment was in the book, but they say they can kill half of New York in like 2 weeks or 3 weeks.
Well, that was interesting. Some of the scenarios that you share kind of early in the book, I found again, like ripped right out of some of the TV shows that we see, or they've gotten your ideas, you know. Why don't, just for fun, why don't you give us like one scenario of what could happen, what would be a scenario for the delivery of smallpox?
Well, that was a question that I didn't anticipate.
I
was going to come back with, you know, they're doing recombinant kinds of things. So my guess would be, you know, the next, and this is what the next book is about, it's a recombinant of several different diseases. But the labs in many countries are working on doing combinations. And you think you've got E. coli, and basically you do have E. coli, but it's been attached to something else.
Mm-hmm. Scary.
So there's lots of things. And of course, with all our antibiotics, we have made an army of diseases out there that is resistant to everything and anything. So who knows what the next one is really going to be, but there's, you know, some of them are because we have just man-made and let people get autoimmune. And bacteria only have one, they only have one job in their little lives, and that's to make more of themselves. And viruses too, that's all they do. Mm-hmm. That is their one job, is to make sure they have made more viruses. Mm-hmm. And I know somebody asked me one day, well, where did AIDS come from? Well, I think AIDS has always been here. And sometimes it gets stronger and sometimes it gets weaker. And right now it's in a weakening phase because the AIDS that we see now is not the same HIV that we saw 20 years ago.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. It has genetically altered itself because that's its job. Mm-hmm. Is to make sure it survives.
Right, right.
Interesting.
Huh. Now, they tried to tell us years ago that AIDS came from monkeys in Africa. I don't know if that's true.
Well, I think it probably did go through the monkey population, but it will find ways to survive. It always does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And sometimes it produces disease, and sometimes... Mm-hmm. It doesn't.
Yeah.
Well, isn't that true of all viruses? I mean, look at flu. The flu viruses, it changes every year.
Every single year it changes. And that's why we have to get, And, you know, the measles is starting to get more virulent again. And, you know, the anti-vacciners are helping that along.
Well, let's not talk about that.
But we don't want to talk about that, but they are, because that's one of the things that helps replicate the diseases even more.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Let's get into your process a little bit. When did you first decide you wanted to write a book, especially about bioterrorism?
Well, the book about bioterrorism, I was in D.C. on 9/11.
Uh-huh.
You know, with the federal government. And the next thing I knew, I was up at US AMRID getting the specialized training. And when I came out of that, I was already writing, but I was still learning how to write. I didn't know how to write. I was writing books, and but I didn't know how to write so that anybody else wanted to read them. But that was the very beginning. Yeah, I have always written stories and tales. And, of course, when I was in nursing school and medical school, I would write letters home to my friend about strange and unusual happenings in the hospital. Because hospitals are funny places. You have to have a sense of humor to work on one for any extended period of time.
I got a hot flash for you. You got to have a sense of humor to go to one. Especially at 2 o'clock in the morning when they're dragging your ass out of bed, yeah. Taking you in for another CAT scan.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
You don't go to the hospital to get any rest. Eh? Not the place to go to get rest. But I basically have spent the majority of my adult life in hospitals.
Well, you know, people are going to listen to this show. They're going to go, they're having way too much fun. Let's take another real quick break and let's hear from LA Talk Radio. Hey, it's Jim Christina here for LA Talk Radio. And if you're like me and you love talk radio, but you just can't find anything worth listening to in that pesky little AM dial, then how about this? How about you tune into LA Talk Radio? You see, LA Talk Radio is the biggest and the best in LA and is a .com, so we have it all from sports to music to self-help to, well, just about anything, including talk. And right now, it's coming right at you. Why don't you sit back and enjoy at www.latalkradio.com. And what a lot of people don't understand is LA Talk Radio is also, we are also going out live right now. And yeah. any mistakes we make is live radio, folks. And yeah. We have been known to make some doozies, so. Yeah, we are live.
Keeping track, how many have I made so far?
We'll see. But we go out live every Thursday night, 7 o'clock p.m. on Pacific time, and it's on www.latalkradio.com/content/writersblock. And if you want to catch us live, that's where we'll be. Or you can go to the same page and you can pick up the podcast. So there you have
it. And iTunes.
Or you can go to iTunes and or you can go to Google Music or Google Play.
Yeah, Google
Play. Yeah. Tonight's guest is Gloria Casal. She's in the studio with Bobby Jean and her little hovel in Albuquerque. And if you want to talk to Gloria, the number in the studio here is 818-602-4929. Again, that number is 818-602-4929. Okay, Gloria, we're switching gears. You okay with that?
Oh, absolutely.
All right. When you were writing or when you were, first of all, I'm going to ask, are you writing anything now or did you kind of take a break?
Well, I took a little break that was not a planned break. My husband got very sick and he died. And I went into a funk and I couldn't, you know, I would sit down at the computer, but I wouldn't get anything done. But I'm starting on the sequel to this one. And is once again, she has moved to Albuquerque now. So.
Oh, Anne is in Albuquerque now?
Oh, actually, she lives up in a beautiful house on the other side of the mountain, but she teaches in A&M.
Sandia Park on Fox Hills Lane, right?
You got it.
Yeah.
In a wonderful pink adobe house.
Oh, that's so cool. So Anne's now making her home here. Okay.
Yes. Cool. And Connor is mad at her because
She's moved all the way to Albuquerque.
Yeah, she's moved all the way across the country.
Yeah. When you wrote, even with the next book that you're, do you use an outline or
no?
No. So tell us a little bit about how you kind of put the book together.
Okay. I know the beginning of the book and I know how I want it to end. And then it takes me on a journey. The whole thing takes me on a journey.
What do we hear every single week?
Something similar.
We hear that from almost every writer we talk to.
Yeah, I am definitely a pantser.
Me too.
You know, I write by the seat of my pants. I can't make outlines. I have friends that make these elaborate outlines. And I wonder if that's not boring. But that's how they have to do it. But that's not how I do it.
With this book, because we have chapters that are sort of dates, kind of goes by date,
uh-huh.
And each one is really a scene, and then they all kind of connect up. When you were writing this, was it kind of scene driven, and then you figured out how to tie them together? Like, would an idea come to your mind for a scene, or does that make us Does that question?
Yeah, but I wanted my people to who were reading to know that something was going on somewhere, and it was going to change things. So I had to like write the scenes in Indonesia and in Berlin and in
wherever.
Yeah.
Did you find that when you were writing and an idea came into your brain that you stopped what you were doing and you would write down the scene that you just thought of and save it and then push it in where it belongs in the story?
No, I would put it in and then move it around inside the book if it wasn't in the right place.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's what writers do.
Mm-hmm.
We all do it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So when is your favorite time to write now that you're footloose and fancy free and having a beautiful home up in the mountains and you see gorgeous sunsets and you can look at Texas from your porch?
I can look from the second floor. Yep. Way up there. It's just this little blue line. But I can look all the way down that valley, that corridor that goes from New Mexico into Texas along Highway 40.
Gotcha.
And Texas is out there. I can see this little blue ridge.
So do you like to write, and do you have any particular time that you like to write, or it's just I got an idea and I got to write right now?
I just write right now.
Yeah.
But I usually get to the, I write every day.
Do you
That's
have a,
important,
do you,
except when I'm planning things like Oktoberfest, and that was awful because it really yanked me away mm-hmm. from my writing for almost 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going into
shock.
Withdrawal syndromes. I was starting to shake and,
Do you like to use a studio or just a laptop in your living room or your family room or whatever?
I have an office in my house that I've set up. It looks like a disaster zone. It looks like somebody threw a hand grenade in there. And...
Well, you should see mine. Mine is all cables and soundboards and microphones. But I still have room to write. As long as I have room for my mouse, I'm good to go.
Yeah. That computer goes with me everywhere I go.
Well, I just write in here now. My laptop is getting too hard to use. You know, fat fingers and arthritis, they don't go well together. So.
Well, could dictate. Didn't we have an author recently that dictated it all?
Yes.
That was amazing. Because, was that Tim?
Tim Niederreiter.
Yeah, he had so many characters, and we were both like, what? You dictated
that? I know.
That?
And the last two chapters, you couldn't even take a breath because it was like constant. Go, go, go.
Go, go, go. That was so interesting.
Yeah. But he needed to hire another editor.
Mm. But anyway, we diverged. Yeah.
No, well, I'm looking for new editors too, so.
Are you?
Now, did you independently publish? Remind me, did you independently publish this or did...
It's independently
published. Bioterror. Yeah. I'm not sure we have ever said the full title. Bioterror, The Essential Threat.
The Essential Threat. Yeah, if you put bioterror in the computer, you get 9 million, hits. So I had to put in something so that it would narrow it down. So mm-hmm. it's bioterror, The Essential Threat. Right.
And you independently published.
And I independently published.
Well, I don't have a copyright page. So who was what name did you put on the publisher?
Well, it actually it's Archway that was the publisher.
Uh-huh.
So and they are affiliated with.
She's thinking.
I can't think of the name. It was somebody that I, when I was a doctor and I was doing nonfiction stuff.
Yeah.
They were publishing all of my stuff. Now, what I found out was Archway is an imprint of whatever event.
Okay.
I don't know.
Well, a lot of the big publishing houses have side houses that are like what they call vanity presses.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then so that's indie publishers, small houses like ours, Tuscany Bay Books, that we put out a book for a customer. We don't charge them hardly anything to do it. But then the promotion and everything is on to them. And if they have an agent, by God, use them. And if they have a publicist, better.
Mm-hmm. Huh. Right.
So you might want to think about getting a publicist, and I have just the one for you.
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
I do.
Mickey Nicholson.
When we're done with this, I will send you an email with his name and his web address.
Okay.
In fact, let's take a break here and let's go right to his website or right to his commercial, because I know you'll be interested. Ronan, if you wouldn't mind, give us a little creative edge.
To all of the fellow authors out there, have you ever asked yourself these questions? I've published a book. Now what do I do? How do I get the word out, find readers, and get reviews? How do I organize a book signing? Or who do I contact to get media attention and interviews? Well, you're not alone. And a solution can be found with Creative Edge Publicity. Creative Edge is a boutique publicity firm that focuses on helping authors increase their reach, get noticed, and build on their brands. They specialize in scheduling interviews in virtually every medium and on an international level, to organizing your author signings and promotional events, as well as helping maximize exposure for you and your books. With a diversified platform and strategy for all genres, Creative Edge works with every type of author, from the New York Times bestsellers to small press and the emerging independently published. Look for them on their website at www.creative-edge.services. Creative Edge, your brand, your future.
And that's actually Mickey Mickelson is the publicist there, or Avery Olive. Mm-hmm. If you do go there, creative-edge.services, you cannot go wrong with them. Oh, here we go. And we're back. And I forgot to push my red button.
We heard you.
So, you did?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
We heard you.
Okay.
So at any rate, Mickey is the publicist there. He's my publicist, and he's a great guy, and he does a wonderful job. As a matter of fact, we're doing one of his author, his very first author. We're doing her third book, and that, Bobby Jean, is Miranda O.
Okay.
Chin Up, Tits Out.
Okay.
And, volume 3.
Volume 3, yeah. That was the book I was telling you about earlier.
Was it Chin Up?
Chin Up and Tits Out, right?
Chin Up, Tits Out, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're looking forward to doing that. In fact, we just signed the contract with her, and we'll have that back shortly, and we'll be on the road to another book for Tuscany Bay.
And so do you want to ask the question?
Is it my turn?
I think so.
Okay, well then.
I'm just looking at the clock.
Yeah, I know. It's getting rather late.
Time is flying by.
So, Gloria, this is the question. You're on LA Talk Radio's The Writer's Block, and there's a reason that it's called The Writer's Block. Have you ever had The Writer's Block? And if you have, how did you get out of it?
I have never had Writer's Block.
I hate that.
I know. And most of my friends hate that, too. But I never have just one thing I'm writing.
Either. Really? Oh, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm writing novels, and I'm writing my autobiography. Am I allowed to say that word on radio?
Of course.
Okay. You have to understand I was an emergency medicine doctor.
She's going to give you the title. She's going to give you the title.
The title of my autobiography, the working title that I would love to actually have it printed under, is Penises I Have Cared For But Not Cared About. Subtitle, Tales of the Emergency Room. Now, you wouldn't believe the number of patients I've seen with odd and unusual injuries and other kinds of things, you know. So that's where it comes from. So all the stories, you know, I could tell horror stories from the emergency room.
Oh, I'm absolutely certain of that.
But that's, I couldn't live my life if I concentrated on the horror.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The funny things that happened in the emergency room, I can write about. And as I say in the opening paragraph, this isn't just the male appendage that I'm talking about. It's also all those dicks that are upright and walking amongst because I went to medical school when women, especially a woman with a single parent with four kids. That's how I was 35 when I went to medical school. And so there were, in the time period that I went to medical school in, they weren't really happy that they had a single female with kids going to medical school. I was actually told they didn't have the right to go to medical school.
Yeah. we had, I don't remember what her name was, but it was the rebel in high heels.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I can't think of her name either. And we also had an undertaker that was really interesting.
Yes, he was. But she was interesting because she also was Tom Jones' lover when she was 17 years old.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. That was in the early days of the writer's block.
It was in her first 6 months.
Yeah. Yeah.
She had that big thing against revenge porn.
Yes. Yes. Well, her daughter. Was her daughter?
I think her young friend had.
Yes, her. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a really interesting. Yeah.
I mean, talk about upright dicks. There you go. I mean, you know.
This is LA Talk Radio. We can say these things, correct?
but she was great, and you know, she had so many stories about when she was a hustler in Vegas. And she was phenomenal. She was just a lot of fun to have on the air. Let's do one more quick shot, and then we'll wrap this up. So, Ronan, if you wouldn't mind, let's do a little thing for All Dogs Rule.
You know, if you're in the Ventura area and you're planning a trip and remember there's no way you can take your canine buddy, how about considering All Dogs Rule Day Camp and Sleepover? That's right, All Dogs Rule Camp and Sleepover is the premium place for your four-legged friends to spend their time away from you. Located on the beautiful Sespe River, if you want a place where you know your buddy will be safe and have lots of attention, being able to play with other dogs, goats, sheep, horses, and even more humans, then All Dogs Rule is the place for you. There's acres of play space, lots of grass, and bountiful orange trees, all with no stress. And a nice list of extras available if you'd want, just ask. So when your dog returns home, you'll have to ask whose vacation was better. Check out their website at alldogsrule.com or give them a call, 805-524-1100. Your dog will thank you.
And that's our friend Russ Avison, who owns All Dogs Rule, he and his wife Karen. And he actually, on the third Thursday of each month, Russ is our co-host for the Writer's Block here on LA Talk Radio. So, well, Gloria, thank you so much for spending your evening sitting shoulder to shoulder with Bobby Jean Bell.
Thank you. I love the opportunity. This has been a blast.
Oh, we have a great show. We have a lot of fun. I mean, I used to sit across the table from her in the studio, and we had a lot of fun.
Those days were very special, Jim. I go back to, you never liked me to, you know, take pictures and all, but I love going back through the pictures because there was just, this is great. This is really wonderful. And it's so terrific to continue this show. But there was something kind of magic about us being in that studio.
Yeah, there always is. But, you know, when you're doing, everybody's doing remote, you know, things, it's a little hard to be in Los Angeles
right
now. Besides that, I'm sure half of Simi Valley is burnt up. And
I know. I've been watching and thinking about your old homestead there and wondering if it would have been impacted by what's happening.
My friend told me that right across the street at the park, between Lemon Street, which is where the park was, my house was right there, on all the way down to Tapple Canyon and all the way up to Walnut was blacked out there. And out LA Avenue, there was no power.
Friends in my old stomping grounds have been without power off and on since the tick fire. You know, the tick fire.
Right.
Where we lived, we probably would have been ready to evacuate for the first time in all the years we lived there. It was that close when we were following that. It was like, oh, my gosh, that was very close to where we lived.
And I'm very concerned because where I used to live in Sonoma County.
Oh, yeah, Sonoma. Oh,
Sonoma County is going, Sonoma, Healdsburg, wonderful winery went up. And
oh, God, what a great winery. And they had that one place that was like a monk's place that had dinner there. It's like an
old monastery.
Yeah, and they were also winemakers. Oh, what a great place.
Yeah. We have to
the ground.
Yeah, we have to keep all the firefighters in our thoughts because there's not much you can do with Santa Ana winds except stand your ground. So, yeah. But anyway, this has been fun.
It has.
It's fun to have a guest right with you, right? Because I know a couple weeks ago you had Bob Sosa there.
Bob Sosa was right here. Yeah.
Bob Sosa was right there. Yeah.
He played with my hair the whole night. No, he didn't. but I love having people in the studio with us, and it's just fun. It's just fun because you get a whole different read from the people.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, Gloria, again, thank you so much for spending your evening shoulder to shoulder with Bobby Jean Bell
and
Hobble.
Super.
And for myself, Jim Christina, Bobby Jean Bell, and Russ Avison, not to mention Ronan Rosner, Sam, and LA Talk Radio. We thank you so much for listening, and we are out of here.